In the first decades of the 20th century, a small group of soon-to-be-famous academics, symbolically led by John Dewey and Edward Thorndike of Columbia Teachers College, Elwood P. Cubberley of Stanford, G. Stanley Hall of Clark, and an ambitious handful of others, energized and financed by major corporate and financial allies like Morgan, Astor, Whitney, Carnegie, and Rockefeller, decided to bend government schooling to the service of business and the political state, as it had been done a century before in Prussia. Cubberley delicately voiced what was happening this way, quote, "The nature of the national need must determine the character of the education provided," close quote. National need, of course, depends upon point of view. The NEA in 1930 sharpened our understanding by specifying in a resolution of its Department of Superintendents what school served was an effective use of capital, quote unquote, through which our, quote, unprecedented wealth-producing power has been gained. When you look beyond the rhetoric of left and right, pronouncements like this mark the degree to which the organs of schooling had been transplanted into the corporate body of the new economy. It's important to keep in mind that no harm was meant by any designers or managers of this great project. It was only the law of nature as they perceived it, working progressively as capitalism itself did, for the ultimate good of all. The real force behind school effort came from true believers of many persuasions, linked together mainly by their belief that family and church were retrograde institutions standing in the way of progress. Far beyond the myriad practical details and economic considerations, there existed a kind of grail quest, an idea capable of catching the imagination of dreamers and firing the blood of zealots. The entire academic community here and abroad had been Darwinized and Galtonized by this time, and to this contingent, school seemed an instrument of managing evolutionary destiny. In Thorndike's memorable words, conditions for controlled selective breeding had to be set up before the new American industrial proletariat took things into their own hands, quote unquote. America was a frustrating petri dish in which to cultivate a managerial revolution, however, because of its historic freedom traditions. But thanks to the patronage of important men and institutions, a group of academics were able to visit mainland China to launch a modernization project known as the New Thought Tide. Dewey himself lived in China for 2 years, where the pedagogical theories were inculcated in the Young Turk elements, then tested on a bewildered population which had recently been stripped of its ancient form of governance. A similar process was embedded in the new Russian state during the 1920s. While American public opinion was unaware of this undertaking, some big city school superintendents were wise to the fact that they were part of a global experiment. Listen to H.B. Wilson, superintendent of the Topeka schools, quote, "The introduction of the American school into the Orient has broken up 40 centuries of conservatism. It has given us a new China, a new Japan, and is working marked progress in Turkey and the Philippines. The schools are in a position to determine the lines of progress. Motivation of Schoolwork, 1916. Thoughts like this don't spring full-blown from the heads of men like Dr. Wilson of Topeka. They have to be planted there. The Western-inspired and Western-financed Chinese Revolution, following hard on the heels of the last desperate attempt by China to prevent the British government traffic in narcotic drugs there, placed that ancient province in a favorable state for laboratory tests of mind alteration technology. Out of this period rose a Chinese universal tracking procedure called the Dangan, a continuous lifelong personnel file exposing every student's intimate life history from birth through school and onwards. The Dangan constituted the ultimate overthrow of privacy. Today, nobody works in China without a dongan. By the mid-1960s, preliminary work on an American dongan was underway as information reservoirs attached to the school institution began to store personal information. A new class of expert, like Ralph Tyler of the Carnegie Endowments, quietly began to urge collection of personal data from students and its unification in computer code to enhance cross-referencing. Surreptitious data gathering was justified by Tyler as the moral right of institutions.